In radio, it's RCA, all the way.
The Radio Corporation of America presents The Magic Key. Turns. The family of RCA, which includes Radio Marine, RCA Communications, the National Broadcasting Company, and RCA Victor, combines over a coast-to-coast network of 93 stations to bring you a full hour of entertainment from the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles. Today, the Magic Key will turn to humorist Robert Benchley, Frank Forrest of the Chicago City Opera Company and Paramount Pictures, Doris Weston, lovely singing star of Warner Brothers Pictures, Walter Abel, RKO radio film star with Whitney Bourne and George Shelley in a dramatic scene from the new picture Flight from Glory, another musical dramatization of a ballad of the gay 90s, the Iowani Namakuia Serenaders playing from Honolulu, the Paul Taylor Chorus, and the Magic Key Orchestra directed by Nathaniel Shelcrit, who opens the program as he directs his own song composed especially for the motion picture The Toast of New York, The First Time I Saw You.
And the first time
Of people to make up a world, and standing here beside me is a man who is all kinds of people. Author, playwright, actor, columnist, critic, commentator, and at the moment a nervous master of ceremonies, Robert Benchley.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Carpenter. I'm really not nervous. I have a sparrow wrapped up in this paper here. That's why it's trembling so. Now, according to the script, Miss Doris Weston is supposed to appear at this time. But, she doesn't seem to be anywhere around here.
Now, wait a minute, Bob. Miss Weston is here. You're supposed to announce her. She's waiting for you to do it.
That's what I say. Quite a big place, this Shrine Auditorium, isn't it?
Now, please, Mr. Benchley, Miss Weston.
Oh, yes, sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, a veritable Cinderella girl, Miss Doris Weston first appeared on an amateur hour from which she stepped into the Rainbow Room atop Radio City, then to a big radio program, and from there right into a picture contract with the Warner Brothers. Scoring solidly not only as a singer but also as a leading lady, her current picture, Submarine D1, finds her the love interest for Mrs. George Brent and Pat O'Brien. Looks as if Miss Weston is definitely in for a long run, and Ken, how do I get her on?
Well, like this. The magic key of RCA turns to the lovely voice of Doris Weston. Doris Weston sings Bill from the production Showboat.
Yeah, I got that on pretty well, didn't I?
Yeah.
Discover the perfect lover someday. I knew I'd recognize him if ever he came round my way. I always used to fancy then he'd be one of the godlike kind of men, with a giant brain and a noble head, like the heroes bold in the books I read. But along came Bill, who's not the type at all. You'd meet him on the street and never notice him. His form and face, his manly grace, is not the kind that you would find in a statue. And I can't explain, it's surely not his brain that makes me thrill. I love him because he's wonderful, because he's just my Bill, an ordinary man. He hasn't got a thing that I can brag about. And yet to be upon his knee, so comfy and roomy, seems natural to me. And I can't explain, it's surely not his brain that makes me thrill. I love him because he's I don't know. Because he's just
Weston, I'm awfully sorry I bungled your introduction there. You know how those...
Well, of course, Bob, I understand. I was an amateur once myself.
Yes, of course. Well, Miss Doris Weston will now sing Night Over Shanghai from the picture in which she was co-starred with Dick Powell, the singing Marines. What was that crack about once an amateur yourself?
Lighted lanterns in the doorways of the Shanghai shops, slant-eyed merchants counting up their yen. Tired coolies padding homeward as the daylight stops, and the twilight fills the winding streets with ragged beggar men. So the sleepy city goes to sleep again and then. Night over Shanghai, under your veil, there's like a siren with dreams for sale, pale hands that beckon, eyes that are bright. These are the blossoms that bloom.
Today, the magic key of RCA turned to Hollywood. Hollywood, the magical word in every corner of the world. And truly, the NBC has found Hollywood more magical than the mere word implies. For the National Broadcasting Company has progressed in Hollywood more rapidly, perhaps, than could be possible in any world center. 4 years ago, one small studio, one lone employee, now a huge and modern broadcasting plant, and another even larger in preparation, manned by a capable, ever-growing staff of employees. Step by step, as the kindred motion picture industry has advanced in technique and sound perfection, so has radio and the National Broadcasting Company. A radio city for Hollywood to call its own. The very latest improvements in studios and equipment. Offices to accommodate the ever-increasing flow of business. Thus does Hollywood step into the ranks of leading American business centers. And as it progresses, so does the NBC, the broadcasting nerve center for the brightest stars in the Hollywood heavens. A modern magical miracle in a magical miracle city.
The magic key turns to Walter Abel, brilliant leading man of the screen and stage who scored a noted success in his very first screen production, The Three Musketeers. Only recently returned from a successful stage appearance with Catherine Cornell in New York, Mr. Abel is at present working as the lead in Portia on Trial. He appears today in dramatic scenes from the new RKO picture, Flight from Glory, made with RCA's improved sound recording. Supporting Mr. Abel are Whitney Bourne, lovely leading lady of the picture, her first Hollywood venture, incidentally, and Mr. George Shelley, leading man of the new film, 40 Naughty Girls. The scene is the small flying field at Delgado, somewhere in Peru. A man named Ellis is engaged in the hazardous business of flying supplies over the high mountains to hidden gold mines. Ellis uses only pilots who have lost their licenses and gives them only condemned airplanes to fly. He is forced to replace aviators killed in his flying coffins with men he picks from a collection of news clippings, telling of pilots grounded due to inefficiency. His latest addition to the staff, a young man named Wilson, makes the mistake of bringing his lovely young wife to this vile port of fallen pilots. Wilson, his nerves unable to stand the strain of flying through the treacherous air pockets and currents over the mountains, takes to drinking. Wilson's wife has come to plead with Ellis in an effort to save the life of the man she loves. Ellis, played by George Shelley, is seated at his desk going over his papers. On the other side of the office is Chief Pilot Smith, played by Walter Abel. Mrs. Wilson, played by Whitney Bourne, has just explained the situation to Ellis. He regards her with shifty eyes and then speaks.
If that's the way you feel about it, I suppose I could put him on the coast run. Anybody could fly that. Nothing much to do except follow the beach. Easy to make a forced landing if necessary.
I'd be terribly grateful, Mr. Ellis.
Well, we want everybody happy here. Makes for better efficiency.
That's the spirit. Just one big happy family.
No one spoke to you, Smith.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Ellis. I think you understand my husband mustn't know I spoke to you about this.
Oh, perfectly.
And I...
Oh, you needn't worry about Smith mentioning it. He's even too discreet at times.
Well, thanks again.
Getting soft in your old age?
Now, you know as well as I do, we'd be short-handed if Wilson cracked up. We'll give him the coast trip until he gets hold of himself. Probably be able to take a ship over those mountains as well as any of you fellas in 3 or 4 weeks.
Ellis, you're an optimist. Well, fancy meeting you here.
I just stopped for a breath of air.
You need it after being in with that rat. Nice view, huh? Dusty field, broken down crates all lined up ready to go out and fall apart.
Well, I've got to get...
Just a minute. This might interest you. If I tell Ellis that your husband can't be trusted to fly his precious planes, not even on the coast route, he'll probably get his release pronto. Then if it's money you need, I can raise enough to send you both home.
You think my husband would take money from you?
Yes, I think he would. As a matter of fact, I'm not concerned at all about him. It's you.
Suppose you let us mind our own affairs.
You've got to go. If you stay here, you'll see him go to pieces.
You'd be disappointed if he didn't, wouldn't you? Well, you're going to be. Now let me get by.
Come here.
Take your hands
quiet,
off me.
Quiet.
Let me go.
Maybe now you've got a better reason to go, if that's what you needed.
You...
Although Smith tries to keep Wilson on the easy coast flight, Ellis forces him to put the pilot back on the mountain run. Hansen, one of the fires whose contract with Ellis is up and who is dreaming of returning to the States, is making his last trip for the outfit. He and Wilson, in their dilapidated planes, take off for the dangerous trip across the mountains. The day passes slowly. Late that night, Smith is called to Ellis's office.
Smith, there's a big load of laboratory equipment at the coast. Use the new ship.
New?
The new ship, yes. Have the old-timer fly it. Who'd be calling at this time of night? Hello? This is Ellis. What's that? Hansen crashed? Where? Yes. Yes. It's Wilson calling from the mines. Hello, Wilson. When are you returning? All right. Careless handling. That ship was good for years.
So was Hansen.
Yes, too bad. Just when he was getting ready to leave.
Are you going to send his money to his people?
Did you ever read your contract?
What are you driving at?
Well, there happens to be one paragraph that reads, any loss due to negligence or other failure in efficiency will be charged against any monies due the pilot.
In other words, Hansen's estate owes you money for the plane that killed him. Why, you dirty, low-down... Oh, what's the use?
That's right. Can't change what's happened. The old-timer will leave for the coast in the morning.
Things go from bad to worse. Young Wilson doesn't get over his drinking habit. Mrs. Wilson is sad, bored with the dullness of the tropics, angry with her husband for his foolish outlook. All the while, Chief Pilot Smith is watching her and trying to help her. One day, the Wilsons have a rather bad quarrel. Mrs. Wilson rushes out on the balcony, and Smith walks up.
Oh, now, come on, Mrs. Wilson. Cheer up. Whatever it is, it can't be as bad as all that.
Oh, no one could be cheerful in a place like this.
I know. You're mad at your husband. He's been hitting the bottle again. But everything's going to be all right. Look, the natives are having a cockroach derby down there in the courtyard. That ought to give you a smile. No? Look, I'll make a little bet with you. I'll pick Pedro, that streamlined cockroach on the left. If he wins, you smile for a change. If he doesn't, I'll shut up about it. Okay? Look, they're off. Come on, Pedro. Come on, Pedro. He's ahead. He's going. He wins. Good old Pedro. Well?
All right. You win.
Wonderful. Hold it for a minute. That's fine.
Why?
Simply because that's how I'll always want to remember you. Hang on to that smile. We'll get out of this mess somehow.
You're a strange man, Smith. I don't know whether to love you or hate you.
This is Robert Benchley again, I guess. I've been practicing a little on this master of ceremonies job, and I guess I've got the hang of it for the next introduction. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, music lovers all over the United States and on the continent have been charmed by the brilliant voice of Frank Forrest, Chicago City Opera tenor and singing star of Paramount Pictures. Mr. Forrest has just completed a successful concert tour of this country and is here to sing for you today. Mr. Frank Forrest. Mr. Forrest sings first that rollicking old ballad, Sweet Adeline. How's that, Ken?
Well, that's fine, Bob, except for one thing. Frank Forrest is going to sing the aria E luce van le stelle from La Tosca by Puccini.
I forgot to mention, Mr. Forrest is at present working in a new Warner Brothers picture with Joan Blondell. Does that fix it up, Frank?
Yeah, Bob, but except it's a Columbia picture with Grace Moore. I'll take romance.
What do you know about that?
Well, if you don't mind, I'll introduce the next number myself. Ladies and gentlemen, the Neapolitan Love Song by the beloved composer Victor Herbert.
Say, kid, I thought I was supposed to be master ceremonies, man.
Tis evening and the sun is at rest, the shadows now fall. In the heavens a radiant star is shining, and softly as the night drops her sable mantle o'er all, there's a nightingale singing of his love for a rose. Madly my heart is beating as I long for my hour of meeting. Vision of beauty and grace, I await your embrace. Ah, come, come, my love. Sweet one, how my heart is yearning ever with you to be. Love light in your dear eyes burning, that purple and true to me. Tell me, when shall I again caress you?
By now, you've probably looked through the fascinating pages of the current Life magazine. It's the issue of August 16th. And you must have noticed the addition of a new dramatic feature. Indeed, a whole new magazine within Life magazine. The name of this new monthly publication is Listen. It was given this title because it deals with radio. This new photographic feature brings you six full pages of pictures and stories, a dramatization of the thrilling part RCA plays in your world of today, telling how radio aids overseas air pilots, showing how radio saves lives and robs sickness of its terror in mid-ocean. The first issue of Listen is packed with the real-life radio adventures of RCA on land and sea and in the air. It's a rapid-fire history, a romantic story of how RCA aids humanity in every field of radio. So if you haven't yet seen this issue of Life with its unique new edition, Listen, get a copy at your newsstand today, tomorrow at the very latest. You'll be interested, you'll be entertained, and we hope you'll get a clearer picture than ever of the countless ways in which RCA stands ready to serve you. The Magic Key of RCA, presented for your interest and pleasure by the Radio Corporation of America. In the second half of our program, we will present the Ioane Namakuia Serenaders playing from Honolulu, the Paul Taylor Chorus, a musical dramatization of the old song hit Gold Will Buy Most Anything, Robert Benchley, and Nathaniel Shilkret directing the Magic Key Orchestra. The Nathaniel Chilcrit has chosen a group of melodies from Maytime, including The Road to Paradise, Jump Jim Crow, Good Morning Lady, and Will You Remember, as recorded by him on Victor Records. In these selections from the Sigmund Romberg album, he will be assisted by the chorus and Mr. Frank Forrest, Nathaniel Chilcrit, and the Magic Key Orchestra.
Rather shocking to a spinster or a frump, for it's apt to show your stocking when you make a little jump. They tell me that Victoria, who's very strict, you know, bars everybody from the court who jumps Jim Crow.
Jump, jump, oh jump Jim Crow.
Take a little twirl and around you go.
Slide, slide, and point your toe.
You're as naughty as a devil when you jump Jim Crow.
Thank you.
is Robert Benchley again. It's a pleasure to...
Now, Bob, maybe you'd better let me introduce the Iowani Namakwaya Serenaders. It's very important that this be done just so that Honolulu will get the correct word cue.
The what?
The correct cue.
What are we doing, playing pool?
Oh, no. Oh, you don't understand. You see, I introduce the Serenaders like this. Ladies and gentlemen, we go now to Honolulu to bring you the Iowani Namakwaya Serenaders. The leader of this group, who is blind, was born under the famous Maile tree in Pauoka Valley on the island of Oahu. These native Hawaiian musicians are going to play two selections. The first, E Ala E Hawaii, meaning Awake Hawaii, and the Kamehameha, a traditional song about the first Hawaiian ruler.
Well, I could have said that. Maybe not all the names, but I think all in all, I could have swung it.
Yes, but do you know the cue?
Riddles the ass at a time like this. No, I give up. What is it?
For the music of the Iowani Namakwaya Serenaders, the magic key of RCA turns to Honolulu.
E hoʻuna nei nā aloha nui lo Hawaiʻi, no ko iao holo o koʻa, ma ke ki hoʻokalapupua o ia no ka radio.
Aloha. From Honolulu, Hawaiʻi, the crossroads of the Pacific, the magic key of RCA brings you the music of Iʻoane Namokuʻeha and his serenaders. They play first, E Ala E Hawaiʻi, Awake Hawaiʻi. Musical tribute to the late great Hawaiian warrior and conqueror of these islands. The Serenaders play Kamehameha.
Kamehameha. Na koa kaula no Hawaii.
Returns you to the mainland.
And here's the moment our master of ceremonies has been waiting for. Ladies and gentlemen, strictly on his own, Robert Benchley. We've known Bob Benchley as an expert on any number of things, from etiquette to bookkeeping. And today, Mr. B plumbs a few new depths and shows us his knowledge of our feathered friends, the birds. May I introduce Professor Benchley?
What do I do? Just plunge right ahead?
Go right ahead, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, and bird lovers. Or who isn't a bird lover? At sunrise, what do we get? The song of the bird. At sunset, what do we get? Now, there's a crack in there about getting the bird that fits in if you want to use it. I think to start, I should say that the world would be a better place if we all grew to know and understand our bird friends better. And that the world would be a better place if, well, if we knew them better. Boy, get out of that all right. Our study tonight, today, is divided into two divisions. First, the migratory habits of the birds, and second, the luring and capturing of the birds. See, Ken, I thought this program went on at 2 p.m.
Well, it's 2 o'clock in New York, but it's 10 o'clock in the morning out here.
I thought it was awful early for 2 in the afternoon. Well, the migratory habits of the birds are oftentimes very baffling to mere man, if I may call him that. In order to study the journeying of our great bird families, we must find out what is in the little fellow's head, for you may be sure that something goes on in the little fellow's head. One of my distinguished colleagues in this fascinating study made an interesting experiment last year. He employed the most modern of methods, I might say, in his effort to follow the migrations over northern Texas and to the northeast to Lake Erie. That would be Lake Erie. He decided to follow the little creatures by airplane on their trip last October. But he found that the noise of the motors completely broke up the flock or herd or whatever it is the birds fly in. So he didn't learn much at all. That takes care of the migration department. We now come to the more adventurous part of our study. The luring and capturing of the birds. And it'll boon in you. It's the part I really like the best. I can go for that. Two methods of approach in luring the little birds into captivity. First, the from-a-distance method, which uses some trick or mechanical device. And the second, on-the-spot method, which is more exciting, although less successful. In the from-a-distance method, it is necessary to employ some form of trap, usually set off by the little creature pecking at some form of bait. Pecking. Oh, you talk about your truck and when the pecking is new. Man, that's the dance you ought to do.
Well, hey, hey.
This brings us to the on-the-spot system. This, as I've told you, is not very successful, so we won't spend much time with it. As a matter of fact, after capturing the birds, there isn't an awful lot you can do with them, is there, when we get the birds? So there isn't much use in going into this department much. I think perhaps I should take up next the discussion of the National Bird Inspector. I've long been a crusader for a National Bird Inspector. Recently, the North Carolina Forestry Patrol, I think it was, designated a fellow to be State Bird Inspector, but he moved to South Carolina before the office took effect, so that sort of leaves us without any bird inspector at all. However, we're looking into the future and hoping for the best. And, looking into the future. I think it's also interesting in our vast audience today to delve into the language of the birds. The little friends have a language all their own, you might say. And it is very entertaining if you can understand it. I can't, but it's entertaining just the same. I brought along my assistant to give us some demonstrations of bird calls. First, he gives us the whippoorwill when angry. And now the whippoorwill when in love. There's something about inflection there. I guess I missed it. But next, we have the oriole after a heavy meal. The grosbeak after having told a relative to get out of the nest. The grosbeak when the relative comes back anyway. I guess that takes care of that department. Now my assistant will give you a real-life demonstration of our special bird lure. The heavy-scented emulsion which is spread in the air, first attracting the birds and then stupefying them. The liquid is spread into the air with a flit gun, thus. In order to bag the birds, you must spread a good deal of the stuff, thus. You see,
Well, I guess our Mr. Benchley has bagged himself.
We're proud to have the Magic Key program come to you from Los Angeles this week, because the family of RCA plays a large and important part in the life of this great city and in the neighboring glamorous community, Hollywood. RCA's sound film recording gives voice to the screen's most famous personalities and brings a new realism to the motion picture world of make-believe by adding sound to sight. Among the leading motion picture studios which make use of RCA Photophone's improved sound recording are Columbia Pictures, Walt Disney Productions, March of Time, Pathé News, RKO, Republic, 20th Century Fox, and Warner Brothers Pictures. To ensure equally fine reproduction of this new magic voice of the screen, RCA Photophone sound systems have been installed in such renowned showplaces as Grauman's Chinese and the Carthay Circle Theaters in Hollywood. The National Broadcasting Company, another member of the RCA family, maintains elaborate studios and technical facilities in Hollywood so that the cream of Hollywood's entertainment can be brought to listeners everywhere. Through RCA Communications in Los Angeles, radiogram messages are exchanged with other cities, with the Hawaiian Islands, and with 47 foreign nations of the world. RCA Victor maintains recording studios in Hollywood, where the leading singers and dance bands from this section record for Victor Records. These records are processed and pressed by RCA Victor in Hollywood. West Coast radio dealers confirm reports coming in from other parts of the country that the automatic electric tuning system incorporated in the new RCA Victor radios is creating a sensation. It's being hailed as the most important development in radio reception since the advent of electric-powered radios. To get your favorite radio programs, all you need do is push a button, and there's your station. Get the thrill yourself of operating this marvelous new radio at any RCA Victor dealer store in your neighborhood. Your old radio will be taken in trade. Prices are low. Only RCA Victor radios may be purchased on RCA Victor's liberal time payment plan.
The magic key turns to the year 1898, and the talents of Charles Forman and Monroe Rosenfeld, songwriters and song pluggers of an era gone but not forgotten. The singing waiters were always sure of a gratifying tip from emotional customers when they balanced their trays and gave out with this one: gold will buy most anything but a true girl's love. That's one of the most beautiful introductions I ever gave anything. I wish I could have heard it.
Is he not wonderful? Such grace, such masculine perfection. A veritable genius on the trapeze.
Why, Eloise, do you still love this man, even after he has spurned you?
Yes, Pearl, my friend. You see, we were childhood playmates. I cannot help loving him. Oh, isn't he handsome? See his lovely mustache floating in the breeze. He is like a jungle prince. Such strength, even in his voice.
But, Eloise, you are a rich girl. He is only a trapeze performer in a circus. Who knows what his father might have been?
I must go to him after the performance. He has avoided me for months, but I must see him, speak to him tonight. Away from the crowd. Let us follow him to his dressing room.
Oh, it is brazen for you to see him in his office.
I must see him tonight. Oh, who is that maiden dressed in rags with whom he pauses to speak? I am overwhelmed with jealousy.
Let us step behind this elephant and listen to what they say.
Shh. Ah, my beloved little Mary.
You were wonderful tonight, Mr. Stoutheart.
Please call me Jack.
Oh, Mr. Stoutheart.
I love you, Mary. Call me Jack.
Jack!
Soon we shall be wed, and you'll be free of this poverty.
My heel, a hero.
Did you see my performance tonight, Mary, darling?
Yes, beloved Jack. I fear for you so high in the air.
Tut, tut. But how did you get in?
I crawled under the tent.
Next week I'll get you a pass.
Beloved, you are so kind.
I shall hurry and change my clothing. Then we shall stop by the Acme Quick Lunch for a crumpet.
Hurry, my darling. I shall wait for you with bated breath and beating heart.
How dare she, how dare she presume to think that such a man as Jack Stoutheart could love such as she?
It is deplorable.
Pearl, my friend, let us go to him.
I am convinced you love this trapeze performer. Yes, let us go.
Well, go on.
Enter. A lady.
One who loves you, and her friend.
One who loves me?
Eloise Carpentier.
Oh, Eloise. Oh, sorry day.
Eloise!
Jack!
Hello.
Leave us, Pearl. We would be alone.
I go.
And thank you.
I go.
Well, go on. Oh, Jack, why have you not been to see me these many months? Since childhood, we have been sweethearts. Even though your mother drove the brewery wagon, I loved you.
I am sorry, but I love another.
Is this woman who has stolen you from me the miserable waif you spoke to only a moment ago?
Hold your tongue, Eloise. You speak of the woman I love. Now I must ask you to go. Be gone.
She shall not have you, Jack Stoutheart. I love you, and you will be mine.
Go. Well, go on.
This must be her hovel. It's certainly on the wrong side of the railroad track.
Oh, a lady. Come in. Come out of the storm. I have no fire, food, nor drink, madam, but you are welcome in my home.
My business is brief but urgent. How cold it is in here.
What business could one of wealth as great as yours have with a poor girl like myself?
It concerns Jack Stoutheart. He whom I've loved since childhood. The man whom, but for you, I would have wed. My, it's cold in here.
I have my love to keep me warm.
I will give you half my fortune and all my jewels. All is yours if you will but give him up to me.
Give him up for gold? No, no, no.
My, it's cold in here.
So take your gold and jewels rare and try to buy another's love.
One more chance. I give you all of my gold and jewels. All is yours if you will give up Jack Stoutheart.
No. Now leave my house.
My, it's cold in here. You will not give him up for jewels and gold?
No, not for jewels or gold.
Well, then, how about a ton of coal?
Do not try to tempt her, miss. She cannot grant you peace. Gold will buy most anything, but a truth of heart. What a truth of heart. A truth of heart.
May we remind you again, the most up-to-the-minute radio reception means RCA Victor electric tuning. Push a button, there's your station.
The members of the family of RCA, Radio Marine, RCA Communications, the National Broadcasting Company, and RCA Victor invite you to tune in at this same hour next Sunday for another full hour of entertainment, coast to coast. At that time, you will hear Marion Talva, contralto of the Metropolitan Opera Company, Tex O'Rourke, radio's newest humorist, Jean Seblanc, romantic French singer, a song dramatization of the old tune Daisies Won't Tell, John B. Kennedy, bringing you a special broadcast of current interest, and Frank Black conducting the Magic Key Orchestra.
Thank you.
speaking for all the services of the Radio Corporation of America.
And Ken Carpenter saying that in radio, it's RCA all the way.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.